And a very pleasant good morning to you. This is live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me directly with your questions. It's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's T-R-A-C-Y-E-L-L-I-S at leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100, and we'll get your question on the air. Well, I want to start off with some special guest introductions. We'll start with you, Representative Engel. Who do you have with you today?
Well, this morning, or today, it is Children's Day in the state legislature. And so I've got my two daughters, Grace and Mercy, here with me. Do you want to say hi? Grace, Mercy?
Hi!
It's an enthusiastic hi.
Yes, they are very enthusiastic about today.
How are you guys enjoying Olympia so far?
How are you?
I love it.
Oh, good. All right. And Representative Abel, you have guests as well.
I do also, yes. My two daughters, Libby and Winnie, are here. Girls, you want to shout hello?
Hi.
Yeah, we're having a great time. Got a chance to spend a little bit of time at the Capitol over the weekend, and they're going to go out today for Children's Day. They set up chairs along the representative desks along the floor, and they get to be recognized and see a little bit of what we do in Olympia.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for the kids and really for the parents, too. During the session, we all get so immersed in what we're doing, and it is sometimes hard to find enough time to be able to spend with family, but it's great to kind of meld the two on this special day, Children's Day.
It is, and it's an opportunity to plant seeds among the kids about maybe potential future service down the line.
Yep, absolutely. This is where it starts, right? Well, yep. Thank you for introducing them, and thank you all for coming. We very much enjoy having you here. So, Senator Short, I know that you were disappointed by something that happened on Friday. You've been fighting this wood stoves bill pretty hard, and things kind of took a turn for the worse, I think, didn't they?
They did. We pretty much expected that. I had follow-up meetings with ecology, and my whole deal is, if you think there's a problem, why don't you study it first and actually look at the information instead of trying to regulate something in advance of even knowing there might be a problem. And of course, they didn't like that pragmatic approach. I offered my amendment to that extent, and the committee chair's amendment was accepted, and they say it's voluntary. So if you're a manufacturer, you can go ahead and ask the state to kind of give a good seal, if you will. The problem is if the manufacturer disagrees with ecology that the stove might be a problem, there's no appeal process at all. There's no ability for the manufacturer to be able to counter that. And frankly, that could just have really, really bad, just circumstances of trying to sell a stove that now the consumer believes isn't certified, which is completely, patently not the case at all. And so it's still a work in progress. I'm going to continue fighting and pushing to make it less onerous. I do think there's going to be something. If I knew I could, just have this bill die, this session would be amazing. I'm going to still try for that too, but stay tuned.
Representative Abel, you've got a big bill coming up, hospital mergers, which may not sound like a big deal on the surface, but it's really significant, especially for rural areas like you represent.
Yeah, this is a barn burner of a bill. And what it does is this is a bill that puts the Attorney General's office in the middle of any mergers or changes of ownership of it's outlined just as hospitals, but actually applies to far more than hospitals around the state. And for hospitals or medical entities in rural areas, a lot of the times they are considering this merger, this change of ownership, really as a way to keep the lights on and the doors open to continue providing service for the communities. And there's a bit of backstory here, and that is that this was the bill that the wheels came off on the Democrats' agenda last session. This is the one that they were unable to jam through at the bitter end. And so they've made very clear that this is a priority for them. I think it's bad for rural health care. I think it's bad for the residents of the 7th District.
Representative Engel, you've had some success with your bills this year. A freshman representative has somehow got all of his bills heard.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I've had four primary bills that I had introduced. A fifth one that I did in partnership with another education group that also got a hearing. But my four primary ones, three of them have had hearings so far, and the fourth one scheduled for a hearing this afternoon on we talked about it last week, the Group B small water system deregulation. So I'm very excited. All of them currently are scheduled to be voted on in committee. They don't have to follow through with that, but as it is right now, they're all scheduled for a vote.
Yeah, again, explaining how it works, you have a bill, the bill goes to committee, the committee chairs decide if that bill gets a hearing or not. If it doesn't get a hearing, it's basically dead. But having the bills get a hearing is a good first start, and then after that, you want to get them voted out of committee and onto the floor, and then again, the powers that be and the Democratic caucuses decide which bills go to the floor for the most part. Now, I guess that there are some exceptions to that, but and then you hope that once your bill gets to the floor that the chamber passes it, and then you hope the other chamber passes it. So for the House, it goes from the House to the Senate, and the whole process starts all over again. One of the things they do to keep all this whole thing moving is they create deadlines, and we call them cutoffs. And Senator Short, I'm going to have you explain because this is like cutoff week and what that means.
Well, basically, Friday is the deadline for bills to be voted out of committee in order to continue, progressing throughout legislative session or continue to stay alive, as you hear a lot of folks say. And so this is a huge first deadline. Each house has that deadline. It's the same deadline, and it's just part of the progression to keep bills moving through the process. If your bill doesn't have much of a cost attached to it and it passes committee, then it goes on to rules, which is kind of an interim step before floor consideration. If it has, a higher cost to the state, to enact the bill, then it goes to one of the budget committees. That's kind of a secondary step. And so there are a lot of deadlines throughout session that bills have to continue to meet to advance, hopefully, into the opposite chamber and then hopefully, eventually onto the governor's office.
Yes. Yeah, so by the end of this week, a lot of the bills that we mentioned, bills dying, will be dead. That's just the way it goes.
Which would be amazing.
Explain why you say that, Senator.
Well, it's actually a date of celebration. If you are looking at bills like, we've all talked about, and we'd like to see them not progress any further or to be dead, as we call them, or actually sort of dead. Because bills can be resurrected by the majority anytime they want throughout session. But it's really that first indicator of which bills will continue to stay alive. It's also a lot easier if there's a number of bills that we're fighting against to really look at a much narrower list. So stay tuned.
Yeah, we should explain the dynamics a little bit here in Olympia. All three of the legislators we're talking to right now are Republicans. Republicans are in the minority. Democrats are in the majority. So a lot of the bills are from Democrats, right? That's just the way it works. And in the three legislators we have here with us right now are against a lot of those bills. So they would rather not see them move forward. And if time runs out on them, that's just one way of saying goodbye to those, what they consider bad bills. But
And
go ahead.
Before we go on, too, there are a lot of bills that are not good at all, but there are also a lot of bills that go through the process where a significant majority of both Democrats and Republicans support the bill. There's a lot more bipartisan work in the legislature than you would think, unfortunately, and it's our job to highlight those things we support, but also those things that have a significant impact, you know, in a bad way, like was stated on the hospital merger bill, we feel it's our, you know, it's our duty to inform listeners, you know, of both good and bad. Right now, unfortunately, there's a lot of bad that we hope may not survive this Friday's deadline.
You're listening to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100. 509-826-0100. Representative Abel, you have a bill, or I'm sorry, there's another bill coming up in the House that you, I know, wanted to talk about. And this is something that I do a podcast that comes out every week, and we focused on this on the podcast as well, the road usage charge, some call it the mileage tax. What's that all about, and why are you concerned about it?
Yeah, this has been a proposal that's been around for a while, but seems to be gaining, unfortunately, seems to be gaining some steam this session. This is an idea where individuals would have to pay a certain amount, I believe it's 2-point-some cents per mile, for really the privilege of driving on our roads. And sort of the idea by the proponents is that it's essentially kind of a use charge. People who use the road should end up paying for it. The problem is that it's absolutely devastating for those of us who live in rural areas. I mean, if you go from Inchilim to Spokane for, you know, a doctor's appointment, that's 200 miles round trip. And so this is in addition to the gas tax that we already pay. So this is really potentially very damaging and devastating for those of us who live a long ways away from urban centers. Now, to state the obvious, if you live in Seattle or Tacoma or Spokane, you know, that's not going to have as much of an impact on you. So this is something I'm really concerned about, and my email inbox has been blowing up on this. People are very fired up about this, and rightly so.
Yeah, we should let people understand that the way we pay for transportation for the most part in our state is with the gas tax. But there are more and more cars that don't use gas, or they use less gas. They're more efficient. And so they're trying to figure out new ways to raise funds to pay for transportation. And this is one of those ways. But like you said, in rural areas, and really even in some urban areas, I mean, think about the people who work in downtown Seattle, but can't live there because they can't afford it. They have to travel from Kent, you know, and I always just think of the barista at Starbucks, right? You know, it's like she's got to drop the daughter off at work, so she can't take transit. I mean, it does affect everybody, but the rural areas, you don't have the resources where you live. I mean, especially when it comes to you mentioned healthcare. I mean, you have to travel long distances.
This is a huge additional double whammy on those of us who live in rural areas. Already we're paying, you know, this huge gas tax. And now the idea is to make us pay an additional amount per mile on the road. I just think it's really inappropriate.
Well, what they'll tell you is that you're going to receive a credit against, you know, so if you've got that road usage charge, the gas tax that you pay will come off of that. But then they are very emboldened to say, well, we don't know how that's going to work. We don't know how we'll set it up, but stay tuned. And folks, for farmers and ranchers and those that have to buy bulk fuel for their operations know all too well they had the same promise when it came to not paying for the Climate Commitment Act increases in our gas prices, and they have yet to see any help from that. So, I mean, as far as we're concerned, it's double taxation, and you just shouldn't expect the state to have that figured out in a way where you're not double taxed.
Plus, it takes a lot. Costs a lot just to collect it. I mean, you know, Senator King, who is our transportation guru in the Senate, said, you know, they tell him that it's going to cost 10%, which means that it's probably going to cost 20%. I mean, just to collect the road usage fees, right?
Well, absolutely. And one of the bills that we've done a lot to highlight over the years, and we have it again this year, is actually to have the sales tax from the sale of vehicles actually go into transportation. Now, the other side would say, well, that's a hit to the state budget, but you could actually phase it in a way that would continue to promote the important work that we need to do in our transportation system without needlessly impacting the state budget. To me, over time, that would actually represent billions of dollars into our transportation system for maintenance, for projects, for ferries over here on the west side. It would do a lot without burdening Washingtonians.
Representative Engel, we earlier were talking about how some bills are bipartisan, and I never expect wolf bills to be bipartisan, but you've had some indication that your wolf bill, and I'll let you explain what it does here in a sec, but is gaining some bipartisan support and is looking kind of promising. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it really has been exciting. I've had a lot of conversations with Democrats and conservation groups about the bill. Not all of them are supportive, but we had the hearing, and the hearing went really well. I know we talked about that a week or two ago. But of the six Democrats on the House Agriculture Natural Resource Committee that I serve on, and where the bill was heard, all six of them have indicated support for the bill. And some of that is predicated on the adoption of an amendment that would keep penalties high for poaching. And I've made it clear the purpose of this bill isn't to make it easier for people to break the law. So we've kind of been negotiating on that. But it looks like if we get that amendment on there, there's a path forward for this to get through committee this week as well as to the floor.
For people who haven't heard us talk about the last couple of weeks, what does the bill do again?
Oh, yeah. So wolves are currently listed on it as an endangered species in Washington State. Those of us who live in Northeast Washington know that they are not in danger, and rather other species are in danger from them. And so what this bill does is it acknowledges reality and drops them down to sensitive. So they're still protected. They're not completely unprotected as, maybe they should be, but in Northeast Washington and other parts of the state, they haven't fully recovered yet. And so this bill would allow the department more flexibility in managing the wolves when there's conflicts. I want to point out we have about 260 wolves in the state, and most of those are in the 7th District. We have twice as many wolves in Northeast Washington as is necessary to repopulate the entire state if we were to spread them around. So they are certainly not endangered, and the Fish and Wildlife scientists acknowledged that in the hearing, which was a step in the right direction.
And the tribes are with you on this as well, right?
They absolutely are. All three tribes in Northeast Washington, the 7th District, wrote in support of the bill, and the Colvilles traveled over and spoke in favor of it as well.
And Senator Short, you have a wolf bill as well.
I do. It's being heard today. It's a companion to Representative Abel's bill, which would essentially be one step closer to local management, obviously in concert with Fish and Wildlife and the groups that have, that have been at the table. But it's really about flexibility at this point in time and the recognition, as Representative Engel said, we have repopulated the entire state in the 7th District when it comes to wolf recovery. And it's been just an incredible burden on our ranchers and really just folks who do any kind of ranching or farming at all. It's been a huge deal. And so this would just really recognize that. I think flexibility at this point is key. Not all wolves are a problem. Not all packs are problems. But when they do exist and they do surface, we need to be able to take care of those. Last year was incredibly burdensome. It was just, there were areas of our district that were hit so incredibly hard, with packs that just really are chronic depredators. And it's that kind of thing that we need to be able to have the, just the flexibility to take care of. I know the department is working on addressing that administratively, but we think it's important to, to put legislation forward that really tells our story in Northeastern Washington and the challenges that we've had. And it's really about balance and flexibility. And I think that this bill provides that. I know it has a hard path getting out of committee, but, the hearing is the first step.
Representative Abel, since this is your bill in the House, did you have anything to add on that?
No, I think that really sums it up nicely. I will just reiterate what Representative Engel said about the strong support from throughout the 7th District and the tribes. I think that is really important in helping educate people about, one, the extent of the problem that we have within the district, and two, the extent that local management really does work. I mean, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. The wheel is invented, and it's rolling down the road. And so I think that's really helpful in educating folks over here about the potential solutions.
Senator Short, one of the things that we've had here in the House and or in the Senate, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about it today just because it's still out there. And today's Children's Day in both the House and the Senate is this parental rights situation. You know, it's interesting because we have the kids here today with us, and then also the I know that a lot of these Democrats, they will have their children here today as well. I mean, when you talk with your, I'll put this question out to all of you. When you talk with your colleagues about this issue that seems so controversial, what are the discussions you're having? I mean, it seems like we've heard a lot about, I mean, we've heard a lot of arguing between the two sides on this, but there's got to be, I mean, when it comes to parenting, all of us parents, you know, we're kind of in this together. We all kind of talk to each other and learn from each other. I mean, are there conversations beyond what we're just hearing in the media?
Oh, sure. Without a doubt. I think what's hard for all of us to understand, and I think people who are watching us do our work understand, is that they may be with you privately, but publicly they're voting with their caucus. And that, I know it's frustrating for us, you know, as well, but it's just one of those things. You know, when I vote, I'm not voting because my caucus wants me to vote. I'm voting because this is either the right or wrong thing, whichever vote you take, for the district. District comes first. But on this issue, the Democrats, I really feel, believe that children of a certain age are completely autonomous. And we disagree with that age. We disagree that children are at that stage in their lives at age 13 to be able to make really serious life-altering decisions. And it's really, frankly, because, you know, they're changing. Their whole makeup is changing. How they view things are changing. And I just feel like it's such a vulnerable time in a child's life at that age that it's nonsense to me. The Democrats will use a long-held law. It's been in existence for 40 years. And it really, for the children to be able to, you know, be in charge of their decisions when it comes to, you know, mental health, like counseling and things like that. The problem is it was very basic and very narrowly crafted. And what the Democrats are now doing is saying that should apply to everything. And that's really not a correct interpretation. So it really, it's bizarre to me that it's parents versus children at a time where I feel with what's going on in the world and in our communities and the challenges in our families that it really puts a wedge, you know, and makes families less strong, which I think is completely, you know, the opposite direction that we ought to be going. But it really comes down to they're not going to stand up and make a vote that says how they privately feel.
Senator Short used the word caucus there. I should explain what that means. So there are four caucuses. There's the Senate Republican Caucus, Democratic, the Senate Democrat Caucus, and then the House, there's one of each. That's what the caucus is when she says caucus. So we don't call them parties here. When you're actually after the election party, the party ends, we become caucuses. So, but representatives, you know, I mean, you have your kids here, and this is a, you know, I mean, you're new to the legislature. Has any of this talk about parental rights kind of surprised you or shocked you even?
I don't say it'll surprise me, but one thing that I've noticed in just going off of Senator Short's comments, you know, she observed that from our friends in the other party that they view, you know, children of a certain age as being completely autonomous. But there's a big caveat to that, and that is that they put out that children of a certain age are autonomous, except when it comes to the government. The government is really stepping in their perspective, into the role of the parents there. And I think that's so foreign to how, you know, I want to raise my kids and how I think most people in the 7th District want to raise their kids. And this is the whole point of the Parents' Rights Initiative, that parents are the primary stakeholders of their children's education and their upbringing. And so this is, you know, one of the reasons people are so fired up about this. But it's a very strongly, deeply held difference of opinions between the parties here in Olympia.
Yeah, I would echo Representative Abel and Senator Short. We have children. You know, I have 4 children, and they're not the government's. They're our children, and we have a lot of reasons to distrust our government. I certainly don't trust them to raise my children or to make the decisions best for them. We need to maintain parental rights and protect our children, and you know, we have avenues in place already for those parents who are abusing those rights.
One thing I'll say also, and Senator Short alluded to this, but the dynamic about folks in the other caucus privately agreeing with us but voting with the group, I am starting to see that. So I haven't been here that long. I've been here about a month along with Representative Engel. But we are starting to hear, you know, whispers and, you know, private conversations in the hallways with some of our friends in the other party. And that's a real dynamic. And so there are more with us than ultimately end up voting with us. And it's part of our job to try and get them to vote with us eventually.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I think in the Senate, Senator Short, and I'm sure it probably can be frustrating, you know, Senator Short is the floor leader sometimes. It just, it may be because I work with Senate Republicans, that's an independent group. I don't often hear, you know, the caucus saying, oh, you have to vote with us, or that expectation, or even if there is that expectation that, oh, yeah, well, you're going to vote with us, right? I mean, that's just not the way Senate Republicans approach it. They really are a caucus of one in some respects, right?
Well, and frankly, I think we should be able to, you know, talk about a bill and convince our colleagues that, you know, in our respective caucuses, that this bill is either a good idea or a bad idea, depending on which one. We should not just blindly follow each other. That's not the job that you know, our constituents have set us here to do. I think frankly, legislating should be hard. You know, all of the different steps that we have to go through, it should be difficult to enact laws, because laws on some level restrict or regulate Washingtonians. And it just blows me away. I'm proud that we're independent, and I'm proud that you walk into a room of people and you don't have the expectation that they're just going to blindly agree with you. You have to be able to make the case. And even if it's making the case very quickly, you need to do that. And I'm proud of that.
We have a question, and we're going to get to that when we come back from our break. But if you have a question, you could email me. It's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter Abel on Okanagan Country Radio. We'll be right back.
I just want to call you Hunter and Andrew because I know on the radio I'm going to get it screwed up.
it's just like,
come on here.
I think the three of us got an email yesterday. It was like Senator Short, Representative Abel, Representative Engel. Couldn't one of you be like a Smith or a Jones?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that is funny, actually.
So the question, just so you guys know, it's nice that we're taking this after break, is have you stopped the stupid cow, I'm not going to say what they called it, but gas bill. I'm going to call it the gassy cow bill.
Well, see, that's going to Environment Energy, right?
It's already been heard. I don't think it's been exact. Or no, it has, no, I know it's not been exact. I don't think it's scheduled for exact yet.
Well,
HB 19.
So, Rep. Schmidt and I were talking about this bill, and he said that actually somebody has figured out how much cows emit, or a cow. You could only have a herd of up to probably 200 before you would start getting taxed, just like an industrial.
So I talked with Representative partially about this bill. She's told me that, yeah, some people are getting, you know, obviously she's getting blowback, right?
Oh, yeah.
People are getting confused over what my purpose is. I just want some information. I'm working on an amendment to exempt cows, less than 200 cows, and to make it clear that this has nothing to do with the Climate Commitment Act, and the intention is not to charge taxes. We just want to have an idea how much emissions they put out.
Mm, right.
Not gathering information.
No.
That might be her intention, but somebody else has other intentions.
Right.
She's the freshman.
Well, and the thing is, if it's directed at ecology, dang right they're going to. Yeah. I mean, this goes down.
Well, I'm going to be careful there because she told me that she also supports my land use bills and my wolf bill.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, short answer is that's not scheduled for exec, at least not yet. So okay. We've heard it in our committee.
They are not required to have the 5-day notice, I don't think, on exec.
No, they aren't.
So.
Not, no.
And remember when it's fine just when we're talking amongst ourselves to use words like exec and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In the real world, that means nothing. So.
And then remember, I have to leave 5 minutes early to get to my other meeting. And if I wouldn't mind talking a little bit just about the Children's Day speech. I'm giving that today.
Yeah. I've got, we had some guests come in this week with PUDs. Okay. I thought it'd be helpful to acknowledge them. And then I've got my George Washington's birthday, since today's President's Day. I thought I'd mention that a little bit as well.
Mention what?
I've got a bill for George Washington's birthday.
Oh, G-Dub's
birthday.
While the
Democrats are redesigning our state flag.
Yeah.
You guys can talk about that too. That might be fun on President's Day.
Okay, stand by. All right, coming back in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. And we do have a question. It is the gassy cow bill. Have you stopped the stupid gassy cow bill?
Well, we have not yet stopped this bad idea of a bill, but it might be that the voters of this state can. And here's what I mean by that. So this is Bill 1630. And there's been a lot of media publicity about this. There's been a lot of feedback that the legislators here in Olympia have heard about how this is a bad bill. It's a bad idea. It would adversely impact our cattle operations.
What is it? We should say, we're just calling it the gassy cow bill. But what does the bill actually do?
Well, this bill does a couple of things. I mean, really, as it's written, it's designed to empower ecology to engage in information gathering about methane gas emissions from cattle. The concern is that this is really a dagger aimed at the heart of our cattle industry here in our state. And this idea has come up before, and this is the latest iteration of it. And so, you know, the feedback has been strong. I will say this bill was heard in my committee, the Energy and Environment Committee, not too terribly long ago. It's not yet scheduled to be voted on in the committee. That could be a good sign. It might be that they're going to let it. It might be that they're going to let it die, or it might be that it, you know, lo and behold, it comes up on kind of short order for a vote. So I would encourage people who feel strongly about this, please absolutely continue to let people know. Obviously, we're the legislators for most people here in the district, but if you know folks who live in suburban areas or in swing districts over on the west side, let them know what a terrible idea this bill is and ask them to contact their legislator.
Yeah, and you can contact your, you can just call in and complain about a bill without talking to your specific legislators too. So, because I think sometimes people think that well, my legislators are Republicans. They're representing my interest, so I don't have any. You know, who am I going to complain to? But you can have input in hearings and in different ways as well. So anyway, go ahead, Representative Engel.
Well, I was just going to chime in here. There's a couple of other interesting things about this bill. First of all, it's kind of telling the fact that this bill was heard in the Environment and Energy Committee as opposed to the Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee that I'm on. It kind of shows what their intention is, right? They're concerned about cattle's impact on the environment as opposed to their aspect from an agriculture standpoint. But also, I think it's interesting that the sponsor of this bill, I had a conversation with her the other day about it, and you know, she's a freshman, and maybe she does or maybe she doesn't understand, you know, who pushed her to do this bill. But she told me that her intention is not to actually have it be taxing people, and she wants to exempt small farmers. It's just pretty obvious when we look at this sort of a bill that it's clear that why would you want to calculate these numbers from each farmer if you don't have an intention to do something with that information? And so hopefully this bill will die. It looks like it might be possible that it will die. Maybe come back next year.
Well, and just two things to add to that. First off, just to juxtapose for just a second into King County and the numerous sewage spills that get spilled into the Puget Sound. Now, I know that's not an emissions issue, but it is an environmental issue. And a lot of times we feel, and rightly so, that our rural communities and our customs and culture continue to be under attack, you know, by a rather urban environment. And I always find it really interesting that they're okay. Granted, King County is starting to do better with that, but they have actually had a lot of overflows into the Puget Sound, which have got to be so detrimental to, you know, the orca and just, you know, just water life in general. But I'd like to remind listeners, getting back to the emissions thing, about where we're at as a state. You know, when you look at us just within the United States and really internationally, we 0.2%, folks. Now, you could say, but that means a big deal. Well, China emits more emissions in a few days than our entire country does. And the reason I bring it up is we've all done really important things, energy efficiency, you know, we've upgraded buildings and homes and, you know, we're more efficient with what we do. And that's a good thing. But it's done because, you know, an individual has decided to go and do those things. The government's not mandating you to do it. It makes sense for your individual self, your family, your community. And we have made great strides in this state. But there comes a point where to get where they want us to go is just incredibly expensive and punitive. And I can't think for 2 seconds that they don't want to figure out how to add one more layer of regulation on agriculture. Folks, our farmers, they feed our communities, they feed our state, they feed the world. And it is just nonsensical to me that they would continue to target agriculture in the way they do.
So there you have it, the gassy cow bill. Now, my wife, well, I don't think she supports this bill. She might support the gassy husband bill. I don't know if that if that were to come up. But so, Representative Engel, you have your daughters here with you, and so does Representative Abel. And girls, you are extraordinarily well-behaved, I have to say. You're doing a fantastic job. You know, it is Children's Day, and, you know, you've got a speech you're giving on the House floor about Children's Day that I think
one of your
children actually helped write.
Yeah. Grace, tell me a little about this bill, Grace, or about this speech. Remember what you said about it? We were talking about this as a family the other day, that I was going to give the speech, and she was concerned that I might get too long and boring.
That's a great concern, Grace.
In Olympia? No.
I think every representative needs to have a daughter like you.
So she took the liberty of writing me a one-page, well, probably a four-sentence speech. Remember what it says, Grace? What does it talk about?
Kids.
What does it say about kids?
It says that they're fun.
They are fun, aren't they? So I plan to incorporate her speech into my speech, but largely I'm going to focus on the fact that kids are, they are fun. They're curious, full of life, creative, and honest. And I'm going to talk about how us as legislators, we need to maintain those childlike qualities and stay curious so that we can understand the people and ideas around us and really think them through, that we need to stay creative to find solutions that are outside the box, and honest and not two-faced as it's so easy to be as politicians. So hopefully it goes over well, and I know my kids are excited. They'll be sitting right next to me while I'm giving the speech this afternoon.
Very exciting indeed. Today is also President's Day. So I guess it's a happy birthday to both our presidents. I get confused on President's Day, but you, Senator Abel, have legislation that focuses on the one specific president who our state is named after.
I do, and actually it goes to the confusion that you just identified. So this idea comes from a wonderful article that came from Mount Vernon, the home of our first president, George Washington, and they've been pushing for a number of years to encourage the states to redesignate our existing celebration of President's Day back to George Washington's birthday. So not changing the actual date that we celebrate, but calling it George Washington's birthday or George Washington's birthday observed. And there's a serious point here. The point is that we're approaching America's 250th anniversary. And for many people, they've lost sight of the contributions of our founding generation. And there are currently five states that celebrate the day. Currently, I celebrated it as President's Day. They celebrate as George Washington's birthday. And our federal government does too. And so we're, in a way, since we are Washington State, it's a little bit unusual that we are not among that group. So I introduced a bill. It costs the taxpayers nothing. It's just redesignating the existing day of President's Day as George Washington's birthday observed. And it drives home the point that we shouldn't lose sight of the contributions of such a monumental figure as George Washington as America approaches its 250th. And then, in a way, as if to drive home the point, some of the folks in the majority party introduced a bill to redesign our state flag with the stated intent of removing George Washington's face from the state flag. So two completely different approaches to our first president here in the legislature. I think mine's the better one. Had a great hearing not too terribly long ago in the State Government Tribal Relations Committee. There was also an additional very dollars and cents piece to this bill, and that is that for a couple of communities in our state, George Washington's birthday is far more meaningful than just President's Day, and that's the town of George Washington.
That's right.
Which this used to be a big deal, and they have informed me that with the demise of George Washington's birthday and it being replaced with just President's Day, that some of their civic identity has been lost. They used to have a cherry pie eating contest, among other things. So there's a dollars and cents piece for George, and also a dollars and cents piece for the town of Mount Vernon as well. It's no surprise that the elected leadership in both Mount Vernon and George have reached out to me supportive of my bill.
George Washington was a very interesting figure. If you ever get a chance, I know a lot of us know kind of the basics, but it goes so far beyond that. It's really interesting. You know, you mentioned the flag situation too. While your bill to change it back to George Washington's birthday doesn't cost anything, changing the flag, the flag of the state of Washington would be very expensive. And it is just interesting. That's just another, I guess, juxtaposition of the two bills, right?
Oh, yeah. In my mind, it's borderline hilarious. You know, mine, again, costs nothing, but the other proposal to redesign the state flag involves establishing a committee that will have representatives from 17 different organizations and meetings throughout the state and produce reports and subsequent reports. And, you know, it's kind of, frankly, a little bit laughable.
Yeah, indeed. One of the nice things that we get around here in today, we have a lot of guests, the smaller version of guests, children, but it is always nice when we get guests from our districts here to visit. And you just had that, Representative Abel, with some members of your local PUD.
Yeah, this was really wonderful and meaningful. So we had representatives from the PUDs in Okanagan County and Douglas County and Ferry County and Ponderay County. You make the trip out here to Olympia to talk about legislation that is near and dear to the hearts of our rural PUDs. And just as, you know, the folks listening on the radio know this and we know this, but I have to constantly remind some of my fellow legislators this, that when someone comes out here from Republic or Medellin Falls or OMAC, you know, in many cases, they're driving 700 miles round trip and it's a couple of days. And in bad weather. And
yeah, so, mileage checks might keep people from coming to visit.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this is an effort to cut down on guests from the 7th District, right, for testifying on our bills. But, you know, it really is powerful and meaningful, and people are able to come out and testify in person. And I'll just say, it was great to see people from home. You know, that was really meaningful. So it was a boost for us, and their testimony was really invaluable.
I'll add, too, completely echo what Representative Abel said. It's so meaningful to see people from back home, people we know, as well as sometimes they're new people we haven't had the pleasure to meet yet. But we have a lot of visitors this week. Few people that come to mind from Okanagan County includes former County Commissioner Sheila Kennedy Delfield. Mm-hmm. We had a group of hospital CEOs, which included two or three from Okanagan County as well. And then Kim Fry from TWSP. It was great to see her as well. So, yes, fantastic to see guests.
Senator Short, you're one of the busiest legislators I know, but you, when guests come over, you still find time to, I know you find time to meet with them and spend some time with them.
Absolutely. With the jobs I have on the Senate floor and in committee, sometimes it's a walk to committee or it's a walk to the floor or it's me stepping off the floor. But it is important to acknowledge when people come to visit, you know, during those times when I'm not able to visit with people. And that sometimes does happen, regrettably. My legislative assistant, Shannon, does a great job meeting, just talking with folks and giving me any information and feedback that they'd like me to have. It's important. It's what keeps us grounded and the jobs we do real and frankly, to stay humble.
Representative Engel, I know you have to run. You have committee. Is there anything you wanted to get to that we didn't touch on yet today?
I think we pretty well covered it. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on around here, far more than we can talk about in an hour on the radio. But we really did hit the highlights, and we don't want to overwhelm people.
Representative Abel, any other thoughts?
Well, just two quick thoughts. One, I am really looking forward to the Children's Day speech that Andrew's going to give here a little bit later on this morning. That'll be a lot of fun. And just reiterating how enjoyable it is to have our kids here and to see the other legislators' kids. That will be great fun. As far as bills are concerned, I'm continuing to receive strong positive feedback on this judicial appointment reform bill that I've introduced to provide for Senate confirmation by a 2/3 majority for the governor's appointees to our state Supreme Court and our Court of Appeals. It seems like there's a pretty strong feeling that the time has come after 40-plus years of one-party dominance of the governor's mansion, and also this recognition that part of the point of the judiciary is that it serves as a check on the other two branches and that it have the trust and the confidence of the public. So very pleased with the response that I'm getting from those bills.
Yeah, I find that bill very interesting just because I've followed this for so many years, first as a reporter, then as a staffer in the Senate, that these appointments almost always become, I mean, not quite permanent, but very close, right? When a governor appoints a judge to the Supreme Court or to the Court of Appeals, I mean, you know, it's almost a permanent lifelong position.
Well, it really is. The power of incumbency is pretty strong, and it's shown by the numbers. I mean, over half of our state Supreme Court was initially appointed to the courts. They didn't run for an open position. Mm-hmm. They were appointed, and they got to run as an incumbent then, which has a huge advantage in just name ID, and almost 80% of our Court of Appeals. So something is wrong here, and this bill is designed to help prevent that.
Senator Short, I mean, it just seems like every week, you know, I talk to you usually a couple times throughout the week, and it seems like every week there are so many things going on. I mean, obviously, we're talking a lot about starting to talk more and more about the budget now, too, as, you know, those talks start to heat up.
Well, they do. Just so folks know, you know, every single item on the budget is being reviewed, not just what the agencies are requesting, but, you know, the programs they have. I know that our lead on the budget committee, Senator Gildon, is really looking with a fine-tooth comb to look at what are substantial areas in the budget that have really drawn significant costs. And he has been working to assemble what he's learned. And when we get to a point that we can share that, I certainly will. They're very large ticket items, that are things that I believe, hopefully we're going to take a look at when it comes to assembling another two-year budget. It's very frustrating to me that the majority Democrats are just all about wanting to increase taxes. And there are a number of proposals that they're looking at. There's the wealth tax. There's increasing the B&O tax. They want to increase property taxes, essentially from 1% to 3%. There are, they want to do simple majority for, school bonds. And I just want to kind of go, whoa, let's time out here. Let's look to see if it's even something we need to do. That doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of folks and entities that rely on the state budget in some form. And they all do important things, but taxpayers are—they're kind of tapped out, and I think we really need to be more cognizant of that when we're developing a budget and really looking at what the state's priorities ought to be. I do know those conversations are very in depth, and I don't serve on the budget committee, so I don't see them directly. But I am, plugged into, understanding better as things go along. So we'll definitely, I think, be sharing this absolutely as we go forward. Right now, because of what we've been talking about today, we've been focused on a lot of bills that are going before our committees, either bills we have or bills we're trying to stop or support, again, because of those committee deadlines. So the legislative session, we've been focused on the legislative portion in our committees, but I can tell you absolutely that the budget committees and the folks who serve on that are absolutely looking, very carefully and closely at the budget.
Would it be safe to say that Republicans, there are certain things, certain priorities that you definitely want to see funded, but at the same time, you're willing to do away even with things that maybe you like, as you try to get this down to avoid new taxes? I mean, obviously education and law enforcement are two places where, you don't want to. From everything I've heard from Republicans, there is not a desire to cut in those areas at
100%.
All. If not, 100%. Go ahead and add to those areas, right?
Well, I think, and just so you, so I would add one thing to that list, and that would be, DNR's work in the wildfire fighting arena and forest health. I think, and arguably, because the more you do on that end, hopefully the less significant wildfire you have in the state of Washington. We pay those bills. The state does. The taxpayers do when the costs of fighting fires get beyond what they were allocated in the state budget. So you're spending money in one way, but you're actually hopefully reducing the need on the back end, when folks are fighting, right, fighting those fires. But look, I've been very careful as a legislator not to add to the problem. And so I think there are significant issues, like I said, that are going to be brought up that I think will help us balance and put together a two-year budget that isn't done on the backs of the taxpayers. So definitely we'll be talking a lot more about that in the coming time.
Representative Abell, just about 30 seconds left here, but I know that's something you're on. The House has two committees, so help me remember which finance committee you're on.
Well, the House Finance Committee.
Right. Are you having these discussions as well?
We are, yes. These discussions continue to take place. I think we're all aware of the task in front of the legislature this session. Conversations continue. And, of course, proposals regularly come up in front of our committees.
Well, that's going to do it for this week. Great conversation. Thank you both. Thank you, girls, for being so nice and quiet during this interview. And we thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week at the same time for Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis. Have a great day.